And here is Bette Davis.
Hello. Lottie Westerman's life came to its turning point in the mid-30s when the country, still breathless from a depression, was going into a new era of prosperity. It was morning and she was serving breakfast to her husband. Clammy eggs, greasy bacon, toast that was burned on the edges, coffee that was definitely on the weak side. Her husband, Chet, looked up from his paper. He'd been reading the foreign news. He'd been an ocean away. And suddenly he was back again in an untidy kitchen with an untidy woman opposite him. He spoke shortly.
Coffee's weak, Lottie. The weakest dishwater.
I was out of coffee this morning. It was just a scraping from the bottom of the tin.
But why do you allow yourself to get out of coffee? If you were a good manager, you'd have coffee on reserve on the pantry shelf.
Yeah. Suppose that would be a good idea.
You know, you're too darn easygoing. This toast, for instance, it's burned. I always have burned toast for breakfast.
My toast is out of order. Haven't had it fixed yet.
Weak coffee, burnt toast, eggs that are cold, and bacon that hasn't been drained properly. I could cook a better breakfast myself.
Then why don't you?
It isn't my job to get breakfast. It's your job. You know, it's women like you, Lottie, who drive men to drink. Women like you are the reason why men leave home. You know, a man can forgive his wife for even having a romance with another man. It proves at least that she has something that's attractive to another man. And it isn't extravagant women who wreck marriages. An extravagant woman's apt to make her man a success. He keeps his nose to the grindstone to earn the luxury she wants, and he winds up owning the company.
Well, that's a cute idea.
We've been married 10 years, Lottie. 10 wasted years for my money. When we moved into this house, you were going to make slipcovers for the living room furniture, but you never made them yet. I know it's a small item, but it's pertinent. When a room's repapered or the house is painted, I'm the one that sees to it. Get you doing anything, or even thinking about anything. And this breakfast is typical of our whole life together.
Look, if you hate your home and me so much, why don't you just leave us both?
You know, I will.
And never come back.
You're darn right. I'll never come back. Once I'm away, I'll stay away.
Your coffee's getting cold.
It was cold to start with, and it isn't coffee. It's dishwater. I get a decent breakfast at the diner down the road. Goodbye, Lottie.
Bye. Oh, this is the day my magazine comes out. Would you bring it home with you, Chet?
Your magazine. Out once a month. It's your most vital statistic. Lottie, as I told you a moment ago, I'm not coming home. This is the end.
Oh, you. Always a little joke.
But it wasn't a joke. Chet didn't come home. Lottie wasn't worried when he failed to appear at the usual time that night. She didn't worry when the night became morning. Chet was just doing this to scare her. She called his place of business in the city along toward the middle of the afternoon. And when they told her that he hadn't come to work the day before, she did worry. She called Wallace Cuthbert, Chet's best friend, on the phone. Wallace was a landscape gardener who lived a quarter of a mile away. When he came into the house,
you've been crying, Lottie.
Yeah. Yeah, I have. Chet's left me. I egged him on, Wallace. He complained first about yesterday's breakfast. It was pretty bad. And then about my shiftlessness. But I didn't take him seriously. When he said goodbye to me, I treated it like a joke. Wallace, it isn't a joke.
No, it isn't. He called me, Lottie, just a split second before I was going to call you. I've had a special delivery letter from Chet. He meant what he said, Lottie. He's gone for keeps.
Mm-hmm.
In just a moment, Bette Davis will be back again. But first...
How do you see freedom from where you stand? What is its meaning, its value to the individual and to society? The Freedoms Foundation wants to know what you think about it. And they're offering contest awards of $50, $100, and $1,000 to find out. All it takes to enter is the time and effort to write a letter of 500 words or less in answer to the question, freedom, privilege, or obligation. Tell it the way you see it, the way you think it ought to be. Type or write your letter and then send it to the Freedoms Foundation, Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, anytime before the November 1st deadline. The best letter from a member of the armed forces will win the top award of $1,000, a George Washington Honor Medal, and a trip to the States to collect. And there are 100 more cash awards for answers to this question. Freedom, privilege, or obligation?
Back to our story with Bette Davis.
Lottie Westerman stared blankly into Wallace's face. She moistened her lips with the tip of her tongue before she was able to speak. And then when the words came, at long last, they were almost inaudible.
The letter, Wallace. What exactly did Chet say?
He said he was starting off in a new part of the country. He said that he'd take another name, and there's no use putting detectives on his trail or personals in the paper. He said he'd cashed in his insurance policy, enclosed a certified check for the entire amount. It's quite a good-sized check, Lottie. It'll keep you going for a long while. He said you could sue him for desertion and get a divorce. He added that there wasn't much reason for you to get a divorce because nobody else would marry you. So you might as well stay married to him.
I'll stay married to Chet. But not for the reason he gives in his letter. I'll stay married to him because I'm sure he'll be back sometime.
We were boys together, Lottie. I know him better than most. He'll never come back. He said it, and he meant it.
I'm going to base my whole life on his return, Wallace. I'm going to make myself over. So I'll be different when he comes home.
Hard to teach an old dog new tricks, Lottie.
I'm 38. That's not old. Chet's 42. That's not old either. He'll come back sooner or later. Only out of curiosity. And once he's back, he'll stay.
How does a woman make herself over from scratch? How does she change her pattern of living and her point of view and her appearance? Lottie put Chet's check in the bank. That was the first step. She went through the house from top to bottom and did a thorough job of cleaning. The second step. She stood in front of a long mirror and studied herself and burst into tears. It was her third step and her most important one.
Why have I let myself go until I'm like this? I used to be a pretty girl. Chet wouldn't have married me if I hadn't been a pretty girl. But now I'm a beat-up wreck of a woman. And I'm only 38. I told Wallace I wasn't old. But I look old and it's my own fault. It isn't only on the outside that I'm all wrong. It's on the inside, too.
Wallace Cuthbert stopped in that night. He found Lottie fresh and neat in a print dress. Her eyes were blurred from crying. But she was able to smile briefly when she saw the astonishment in his eyes. And when she spoke, it was with decision.
Wallace, I've been going back in my mind over the places where my marriage went wrong. The living room slipcovers I didn't make. When I learned I couldn't have children, Chet wanted to adopt a child. But I said no. child would have kept me on my toes, Wallace. Chet had a flirtation with a woman who was visiting next door. I didn't take it seriously. That made him furious. Not because he gave a hang about the woman, but he wanted to be taken seriously. Wallace, I'm going into business.
Well, what sort of business?
When Chet bought way out here, it was because he wanted land. We have 7 acres plus what the house stands on. He said he didn't mind the long trip into the city because land was an asset. He had dozens of plans, but like everything else, I ignored him. Wallace, there isn't a hotel for miles around.
Well, that's true.
I'm going to take the money Chet sent me and build cabins. Tourist cabins, where people can stay for a night or a couple of nights or a week.
I never heard of such a thing.
My magazine, the one Chet used to bring me every month, had an article in it about tourist cabins. Seems they're easy to run if a person's neat and efficient. And I'm going to be neat and efficient. So help me, I mean it.
It's a darn shame you started thinking this way, Lottie. When it's too...
You were going to say too late. But it isn't too late, Wallace. It isn't. Chet'll come back.
Nobody, least of all Wallace Cuthbert, thought that Lottie would carry through on her program. But she did. Doggedly, she built the cabins and furnished them. She made curtains for the window. She saw to it that the beds were comfortable and the pillows soft, that the sheets and cases were of good quality. Chet had been away for 6 months when Lottie's Tourist Rest opened for business. And she did good business from the first. Tourist cabins were a novelty in the 1930s. A year went by, 2 years, 5 years. And one day, Wallace dropped over.
Glad to see you, Wallace. Any word from Chet?
I haven't had any word since that first letter he sent me the day after he disappeared. Lottie, remember what he said in that letter?
Yeah. He said it wasn't worthwhile for me to divorce him. He said no other man would marry me.
So things have changed. Plenty of men would be glad and proud to marry you. Aside from the business you're doing and the bank accounts you're piling up, you're a mighty attractive woman.
Thanks, Wallace.
Yes, I used to pity Chet when you and he were married, and now I pity myself because you're still married to him.
You know, if I didn't have a level head on my shoulders, I'd think you were proposing to me, Wallace.
Well, sort of I am. I know you like me, Lottie. You're always asking my advice, and almost half the time you take it.
And half the time I'm not sorry I did. But I won't take your advice in this, Wallace. The reason I'm making a success is because I'm doing it for Chet.
Yes, I know, but so much time has gone by.
I realize that, Wallace. But I'm not giving up. I know he'll come driving down that road someday.
Maybe he won't be driving, Lottie. Maybe he'll be tramping along with a pack on his back.
As if that'd make any difference. Thanks for building up my ego, Wallace. But I'm waiting for one man. Only one man.
Back to our story with Betty Davis.
It was a fixed idea with Lottie, and nothing or nobody could change her way of thinking. 10 years went by, and her hair, which had been lightly sprinkled with gray, was now entirely gray. Its silvery sheen softened her face. Another 5 years went by. Wallace, older, extremely prosperous himself in his own way, proposed to Lottie periodically. But
I'm a married woman, Wallace.
Technically, but not actually.
Oh, now aren't you ashamed of yourself? Trying to lure a married woman into the divorce court?
Oh, you're married to an idea, Lottie, to a legend, to a make-believe man.
who might be a character in a book or a movie.
Chet's real enough.
Yeah, maybe he got a divorce without your being notified. Maybe he's married again and has a parcel of children.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
It's not so ridiculous. Lottie, if you heard that Chet were married to somebody else, would you be willing to marry me?
I don't think so.
If he were dead?
I'd be a widow. Things would be different. Yes, if he were dead, I might consider. But he isn't dead, Wallace. He can't be dead. Everything in me is geared to thinking he's alive. It's waiting for him that's given me the courage to make something of myself. To keep that lamp, the one we spoke of long ago, lighted.
Yes, I realize that.
Do you believe in telepathy, Wallace?
Oh, no.
Well, I do. I've sent so many thoughts out to Chet that some of them are bound to reach him eventually. No matter where he is.
Time going on and on. Another 2 years went into the discard, and Chet Westerman had also gone into the discard. It was as if the earth had opened up and swallowed him. And then one day, Joe Santini, Wallace Cuthbert's assistant in the greenhouses, handed him a special delivery letter.
The postman just brought it, Mr. Cuthbert. It's from clear across the continent, according to the postmark, and there's the name of a hospitable printed in the upper left-hand corner of the envelope. I hope it's not bad news.
Bad news? But I've got a funny feeling, a prickling in my thumbs, Joe. I had the same feeling when Chet Westerman sent me a special delivery letter with a check enclosed. Seems like a century ago.
You mean Mrs. Westerman's husband? She must have been crazy about him the way Mrs. Dexter, the lady I'm helping with her garden, is crazy about her husband. Oh, I'm helping her on my own time, Mr. Cuthbert.
Oh, yes, I know, of course. There's no use putting off the evil moment. If Chet's sick, he needs help. And I'm the logical one to give it to him. Run along, Joe. You run along. Don't waste too much time on Mrs. Dexter.
I'm not wasting time, believe me. She's a real nice woman, Mrs. Dexter.
Well, now that he's gone, might as well get it over with. So that's that. Well, I'd best tell Lottie.
Wallace Cuthbert tucked the letter into his pocket. He started off across lot toward Lottie's tourist rest. Behind him stood his neat greenhouses, his rows and rows of perennials and shrubs. In front of him loomed the tourist cabins, neat, precise, with crisp organdy curtains, with flower boxes that he'd filled himself. As he came close to the cabins, he spoke aloud.
Our land joins just as we should be joined. Perhaps now she'll listen to reason. Hi, Lottie!
I'm out back, Wallace.
Okay. Well, what's that you've got in your hands?
It's a baby kitten. His eyes aren't open yet. Heaven knows how it got here. Poor little thing.
Could be it was tossed out of a car.
Could be it was. Oh, how could anybody be mean to a little thing like this, Wallace?
It takes all kinds. What are you going to do with it?
Why, keep it, of course. It'd be nice to have something little and cute playing around the place. Honest to goodness, Wallace, if I weren't 58, I'd adopt a child and... Wallace, you look like there's something on your mind. What is it, old friend?
It's funny you should call me old friend today. I don't think you ever did before, Lottie. I just got some tulip bulbs in from Holland, and I think I'll plant a couple hundred when fall comes around. Maybe I'll plant some along the edge of your land where it meets the highway, and then perhaps
A double row right up to each cabin there.
Good. Chet'll like that. Tulips are his favorite, you know. Oh, the phone. Excuse me, Wallace. I'll answer.
I am a sissy, but she called me old friend. I might as well tear up this letter, but I'll always remember what was written in it. A man who, at the last, said his name was Chet Westerman, died in one of our wards today. He asked that you be notified. Well, that's that. Much as I love her and want her, I can't put that lamp out. If I did, I'd be sentencing her to live in darkness.
A lamp in the window. How many of us have a lamp which we often jokingly call a torch? But it's really much more than that. Without our lamp glowing, we might feel pretty empty inside. Joe Santini was helping a Mrs. Dexter with her garden, and on his own time, too. Why, you ask? Perhaps because Mrs. Dexter was a woman of mystery, and Joe Santini was the only one who understood her.
Again is Betty Davis.
As Joe Santini worked along with Laurel Dexter in her garden, he learned things that you can't learn from books or in the classroom. Once he said to her, quite frankly, "You are not my type, Mrs. Dexter. At least if anybody asked, I'd say you weren't. You're usually so quiet, and well, when you do speak, you say such strange things. And yet you're sort of spoiling me for a girl I go steady with." You'll know what Joe meant when you meet him again. Until then, this is Betty Davis saying goodbye from the Whispering Streets.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Barbara Eiler, Howard McNear, and Jay Novello. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is Dan Cubberly.
Whispering Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.